You're listening to Well Made, a podcast from Lumi about the future of e-commerce. I'm your host, Stefan Ango. Helen Rice, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you're the co-founder, creative director, head of special projects at Fuzco. Fuzco is a design agency, among many other things. How do you describe Fuzco these days? I can't say Fuzco.
Oh, no. So Fuzco is, I guess I'd call it a creative agency. It's actually something that Josh and I were just talking about the other day. We actually need to work on the way that we talk about Fuzco a little bit, just because to us, it's such a whirlwind of different things, you know, it's changed so much over the years. But yeah, a creative agency is a good couple words to describe it.
Yeah, some of the other things that you've been doing, and we'll dig into these, you have your own online store, pretend store. You've been getting involved in real estate with Sirius Buildings, which I have a lot of questions about. Are those some of the big side projects that you guys are working on that kind of try to stretch the definition of what Fuzco is?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, there have been so many different side projects that have come up over the years, but those are the two that we have deemed successful or interesting enough to have their own logos. But yeah, no, Pretend Store is this little shop that we started once we realized we really enjoyed making things for other people. We thought, why don't we start making things for ourselves? And it's been a lot of fun. And then Sirius Buildings is, in a similar sense to Pretend Store, just, you know, realizing that we were doing something and then putting a name on it. So we started in 2005, and since the beginning have always been really excited about interior design and have designed all of our offices. And at one point we started buying the buildings that our offices were in and renovating them. And so we thought, why don't we start a catalog of all these renovations that we've done? And that's what Sirius Buildings is.
So for people who don't know some of your work, I would highly recommend that you take a look at fuzco.com and steep yourself in all of the projects that you've done, just to kind of get a flavor of what we're going to talk about. But you've done work for a lot of well-known companies and lots of smaller companies. Personally, I've always associated your work with the MailChimp stuff. I think maybe some of the first projects that I knew from you guys was MailChimp, but you've worked on Etsy and Bonobos and Google and Jenny's Ice Cream and tons of other stuff. And you're based in Charleston, and you have an office in Portland as well. When people think of Fuzco, what are the things that come to mind that you've noticed? Like, what are the most well-known projects?
I think it depends on where you live and how you were introduced to Fuzco. I think a lot of people know us by our MailChimp work, which is awesome. We love MailChimp. We love working with them. They gave us so much creative freedom in the work that we did together. And so that's been definitely a big part of our identity. But, you know, locally to Charleston, there's so many restaurants that we've worked with here, and so many, you know, new companies that are creating products, like soap companies and shoe companies. And so a lot of the people that are here know us through those local companies. But then, you know, in Portland, we do a lot of work in the Bay Area for, you know, a lot of companies that are starting out there.
I think another aspect that's unique is that you're very multimedia. You go into not just graphic design and branding and identity, but video and making websites. Like, can you give an idea of the range of different types of projects that you've done?
You know, I feel like we always try to keep things different, or keep things evolving, just to stay interested in what we're doing, which is another reason why we do such a wide range of work. Trying new things and doing new things feels like an important part of who Fuzco is. I think it's been funny. We're always interested in that, but we're also interested in sort of carving out a niche for ourselves in a way. So in the clients we work for, but also in what we do. So in, you know, historically we've done everything from strategy to naming to identity work and packaging work, collateral, you know, physical brand pieces, to experience design, like coming up with wild ideas for trade show experiences, to interior design, to the digital space, websites and apps and, you know, just interesting experiences that you can have online that connect you to the physical world. And we have, you know, people that work with us who are interested in things like movement and animation. And so we're trying to also incorporate their interests and trying to get projects that are going to help them explore new areas of their skill set.
Can you tell me a little bit about the start of Fuzzco and you meeting Josh, who would become your husband, and how that relationship evolved into the company you run?
Yeah. So, Josh and I met in college. He had done a little bit of web development for some companies in the past, and I had learned Flash in order to be able to design my own websites. I was a studio art major, so I did a lot of painting and kind of tried to become a painter and, you know, set myself up in that world. So we moved to Charleston, South Carolina, and realized that there wasn't the opportunity here that we had kind of expected. And so we thought, why don't we just create our own jobs? And so it was really fun. It was a way for us to collaborate. We had collaborated in college on some art pieces where he would write a story and I would illustrate the story. And so it was this whole new adventure. And so Fuzzco kind of was created out of this necessity to pay the bills, but also it was this really fun art project.
It's interesting to me that neither of you had training in graphic design in particular, in the sense that I feel like so much of the work involves graphic design to some extent. Do you see that as a strength, that it allows you to maybe, you know, explore more out-of-the-box concepts? Or is that something that over time you personally have picked up the skills to do it or have hired the right people for that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at first I think there was about 3 years where I was the main designer and Josh, we sort of took shifts on who was designing and who was developing. We both have an artistic or a creative eye in general. And so we knew what our strengths were and we played to our strengths. And so a lot of it was illustration and just trying to make, you know, an interesting canvas out of what we were designing. But then when we started hiring, that's when we really were able to bring people in who had a background in design and who we just really loved their work and thought we're going to put a better face on what we were, you know, trying our best to fake. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I always find fascinating about your work is that Fuzzco itself has a very strong identity, at least in my mind. And maybe it's just your use of the color red and like the way that you use language and the description of the projects that you work on. But in our world at Lumi, we do a lot of client work as well. And it's always a challenge to make sure that we're showcasing the work that we're doing and allowing that to, you know, live and to be unique. But you guys have found a really good balance between those two things where, somehow you're infusing your own personality into these projects without overtaking them. I don't know exactly how to describe that, but it's a really interesting balance that you guys have struck.
Thanks. I think there's so much of our own personal interests and our own, you know, aesthetic that we bring to everything that we do. And so it's hard to decouple that aesthetic from our client work. And I think that, of course, there's so much independent thinking that goes into every project. But there's also like a desire for a certain amount of cleanliness, a minimalist sort of perspective, but also a desire for things to be interesting and fun and for there to be some sort of memorable experience that's involved in the work.
Well, you mentioned fun. I think I definitely think of that. What are the other personality traits of you as a company, as an organization, or the things that you try to infuse into projects?
I mean, I think a lot of it comes out by way of being so instinctual in the design process. It's like, you know, we will work on something and try to just freely associate with the, you know, what the project or what the task at hand is. And then whatever strikes a chord is what we move forward with. So it's not this, we try not to overthink things. And I think so much of that process ends with, you know, a really sort of human perspective.
Is there something that you've noticed that is, what does it feel like now, you know, 13 years into Fuzzco at this point, like what are you seeing now about the world, the industry, the clients that is different from when you started?
There are so many direct-to-consumer products coming out, which I love, but I'm also a little tired by them. I feel like they're all trying to market to the same audience. and they're all trying to market to the same audience in the same way. You know, the photography styles and the identities and the layouts of the websites. I just feel like it's become somewhat predictable. But in a way, it's a phase. And I think that I feel like we're trying to find a distinct voice for the clients that we work with. But yeah, no, it's interesting. I think, you know, everyone is so connected online in a way that was not happening when we first started out. And part of what has become the sameness of a lot of these new brands coming out is because there's this aesthetic that people look to sort of qualify them as someone who is able to earn the trust of the consumer. And so a lot of it is this same sort of looking stuff. So, but then again, you know, I think there's been a really interesting thing going on with type lately. Type is, people are becoming a lot more aware of it. It's becoming a lot more central to the landscape. But also, you know, brands, if you look at, I think there was some article where someone was talking about, you know, how Airbnb and Google and all these companies basically have the same, like the logo type. It's just so bland. And I mean, it's beautiful geometric typefaces, but there isn't the uniqueness that you used to see in logos. You're now seeing in the brand and its personality and how it approaches and relates to people and how they experience it. And so there's this interesting subtlety that exists there that used to not be present.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this in a recent episode with Lauren Sherman, which was that there's so many smaller brands that are emerging online that are in some cases taking away market share from really big companies,
right?
Because it's easy to get off the ground with all these tools that we've been talking about, the yeah. Shopify's and MailChimp and stuff like that. And a lot of those have these like built-in templates that when you look at them objectively, they're very well designed. To some extent, I hate to say this, but like in the 20th century, we sort of solved graphic design to
right.
some extent. Like the principles of modernism are very strong. So what what you're trying to do when you're building a brand, like if you were The Gap or something like that 20 mm-hmm. years ago, you had to develop identity systems mm-hmm. from scratch, and it was very costly to do so. But now when you start with a out of the box Shopify theme, you've got all of those like 100 years of us trying to figure out what graphic design is.
Right. It's built in.
Already built in.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, what you do is give your company a name and you've got something that looks professional,
mm-hmm.
but it seems like, you know, what your work has been about is giving it a soul or something that goes beyond that. And I think that that's something that people are going to be searching for.
Definitely. You know, it's all about that. It goes back to the experience that you have with the brand and, you know, what the box looks like when it shows up, if something special happens when you open it. I'll give you an example of something that we're working on with one of our clients, East Fork, who I love. They make pottery and more. In North Carolina, we're working on a new website for them. And part of the experience, the checkout experience is, you know, it sounds really simple, but it's hopefully going to be really engaging. Basically, when you're going through the checkout, you see these different emojis and these different expressions, and then you pick one and you don't really know what you're doing at the time. But then when your package comes, that there's something that comes through, you know, there's this experience that's based on which emoji you checked in the box. And so, you know, baking in little things like that, that are special and that breathe life into the specific perspective of your brand is so important.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thing. And I think that is the challenge for all of these small companies that are popping up. How do you find those things? I mean, it seems so easy. You guys are in the world of creating that. But if you're someone who's starting off, how do you go about creating that?
Well, I think it's so much to do with who is behind the brand and what they're willing to do, you know, and what they're interested in. And I think pulling out little facets of you know, the founders' personalities or interests and putting them into the process is so much of what we look for, because it needs to be natural to the company that we're creating so that they can carry it on once we're done with our work. And so we look for those ways, you know, we don't want to to really challenge the user when they're putting something in their cart or when they're picking out a size on a product page. But there are moments that can be more free, or that we can find something interesting or find something unique in, like, you know, say the checkout experience, or making something just slightly tweaked and bringing someone out of sort of the coma of the process is what we try to do.
What you're saying is really interesting to me, because I was going to write an article, and I think now you've changed my mind on something. I was going to write like a Medium think piece or something about this, but I was thinking about that aspect of how easy it is to now put something out there that fits all of the like typography guidelines that you would learn in school without having to go to school. You can just like let that be part of your template.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've seen the movie Helvetica, but there's a there's a quote in that movie by a famous Italian graphic designer, Massimo Vignelli. I forget how it goes, but his point is like the life of a designer is to fight against ugliness and try to make things like, you know, fit his aesthetic of the world. But now that thing is like out of the box. And my thinking about that is like, well, maybe we've solved it then. Like, maybe that's good. Like, we're done. We got it.
Right.
We did the thing that we needed to do. Like, there was so much bad graphic design. I'm not saying it's all good now, but
right.
It's all passing maybe a higher bar than ever before.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the only downfall to the templates is just the ubiquity of the template, you know? And if everyone, I just feel like, and I can't always spot them, but I feel like when I am on a website that is a Squarespace or is a Shopify template, I'll know, you know? And I think that there are so many missed opportunities when someone is just going in and literally, you know, dragging this thing out of a box and putting it up and being able to connect with your customer in a really interesting way. And, you know, maybe that's not something that is in everyone's phase one, you know, their ability to afford to bring in an agency like ours or even, you know, a freelancer to sort of tweak things. But I do think that making it your own is hugely important to the success and sort of like ability for your brand to establish itself and be long lasting.
I wonder if we'll see a fight against minimalism at some point soon to counteract that aesthetic, because it's I think, you know, minimalism and the principle of modernist design are tend towards a specific interpretation. Like there is an end result that is the ideal, whereas, you know, more loose graphic design styles or illustration styles or photography open up very creative differences. And someone pointed out to me the other day that like the point of a brand is to differentiate itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's to like position your company as being different from everything else on the market. If minimalism once was a way to differentiate yourself, maybe it isn't anymore.
Right. Well, I think minimalism is, I mean, in so many ways is excellent design. You know, it's, you always have to start with this foundation of beautiful, minimal, easy to use interfaces. But then if you're not putting something on top of it, if you're not layering, you know, emotion and character and, you know, using language that helps people connect to the humanity of whatever it is that the company stands for, then it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah. But that's hard. To stand for something is like, that becomes the hard work. You have
True.
To figure out what you're
yes.
going to stand for.
Yes. Well, and that's what we do too. It's hard to, I think it's hard to do for yourself, especially. So I think when a lot of times when we'll work with brands, we really help identify what is the differentiating factor. And then really trying to find a way to pull together a story that feels natural to the company, but also, you know, really is a defining, that we find a defining story for them.
Why is it so much easier to give other people advice? It's like, sometimes it's, you know, you find that with your friends, you're like, it's so obvious. Like,
right?
You're this kind of person or you're doing this kind of thing and that's good.
Yeah.
And this other thing, you know, forget about that other thing.
Right.
And for whatever reason, we have a really hard time judging ourselves that way.
Yeah. It's so hard to understand how you come across, and, you know, because I guess we're so all in our heads and we have these preconceived ideas of who we are, and, you know, and yeah, it's hard to separate from that and really see ourselves with no bias.
Can you think of examples of that? I mean, any specific clients that come to mind where there was some sort of breakthrough that way that you were able to say, like, there's this thing that you're ignoring that is like so core to you as the identity of your company?
Yeah, I do. So we're working on a pizza company right now, and we're very excited about it. It's pizza that is made in Napoli, and it's currently being sold to Italians. And what they want to do is they want to sell that same pizza to everyone in the world, which means that that pizza is going to have to be frozen and transported to everyone in the world. And so, you know, when the company came to us, the idea was, okay, how do we make this brand? How do we convince people that this is the best pizza in the world? Because it actually is. It's amazing. It's delicious. And, you know, how do we communicate that via the web? And how do we convince people that they need to order this online? And they really didn't want to talk about the fact that it was frozen. Because, you know, frozen pizza, everyone has this preconceived idea of what frozen pizza is. And so they wanted the story to be about the founders and the authenticity of the ingredients and the fact that they know the names of the cows who make the cheese and, you know, all these beautiful things that are true. But in, at the end of the day, it will come to you frozen and we can't ignore it. And so we thought, how do we talk about this process and talk about the wonderful thing that this process does for this pizza and keeping it fresh without using the word frozen? And so we thought, okay, well, and then we're also thinking about, you know, Napoli and the fact that there's this really big volcano, Vesuvius, that sort of looks over, you know, this like ominously hovering over the city. It's currently sleeping. And then we thought, okay, well, what if we talk about putting these pizzas to sleep? And we're thinking about Sleeping Beauty and, you know, the fact that they put the pizzas to sleep and then the pizzas arrive on your doorstep and you wake them up in the oven. And, you know, it takes like 10 minutes and they're these wonderful, they were, you know, as beautiful as they were when they came out of the oven. And so we're calling it the Sleeping Pizza. Now it's going to have another name, but that's going to kind of be like the motto.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That was a really, it was a really fun discovery. And, it took a while to really, I think, for us, first of all, to understand that this was the right way to talk about it, but also to convince the client that this is, you know, something that we need to talk about and we need to find the right way to talk about it. But then the whole, like, romantic idea of putting this pizza to sleep and waking it back up, it just became this great story. And I think we're taking what could be, you know, a negative into a really interesting part of the story. And everyone we tell, they're like, oh my God, I need to try that sleeping pizza. You know, it just is, it's become catchy right away. And yeah, it's been really cool.
Yeah, the way that you described it, your whole pitch was perfect. I feel like I had the entire image of the volcano and the pizza and everything. It was like a classic, like a Don Draper pitch or something from Mad Men. It was very, very good.
Cool.
I mean that in the best possible way.
Yeah.
But like bringing that story to life is really challenging, and it requires a certain mindset that sometimes is easier done by someone who's looking at it from the outside.
Definitely. Definitely.
How did the collaboration with MailChimp come about? Because you've done a lot of projects with them.
Yes. So we met Mark DiCristina at Build Conference in Belfast. We had done all the branding for that particular year of the conference. We'd been using MailChimp. We always loved MailChimp. And he approached us, and he and his creative director, Ron, at the time, were so excited to talk about the fact that we both were from the Southeast, because they're in Atlanta. And so we were like, how do we work together? And so got a tour of the office and talked about their brand. And it just felt so natural, the way that they think and the way that we think really plug in. And so, you know, they just started bringing us in on various projects, and we really became an extension of their team in a lot of ways.
You have moved offices a few times around Charleston, and you mentioned that you've been renovating these different buildings. Tell me, how do you define Sirius Buildings? What is it for you? What kind of project is that?
So Sirius Buildings is, I guess it's a brand that has come from Josh and I's interest in architecture and the fact that we have been purchasing and renovating buildings in Charleston. And actually we did one and we're doing two in North Carolina now, but it's something that has kind of naturally evolved from our personal interests and has found its way into our services offerings for Fuzco. The more experience that we've had doing projects for ourselves, the more of an application it feels like for clients. I'm not sure if we list interior design on our Fuzco services page anymore, but that's something that if there's a conversation that comes up with a Fuzco client, and they are interested in, whether or not we do interiors, we will engage with clients up to a point. It usually becomes more of like a setting a vision or establishing mood boards or establishing materiality. We don't necessarily get into all of the drawings and layouts of interior spaces, but there's a lot of ways to bring the brand to life in spaces. And so finding that transition, that extension in our work with Sirius Buildings has been fun.
I subscribe to that philosophy because at Lumi, we've always, we started the company sort of in the same way that you did, which is neither of us ever had real jobs anywhere else. And we wanted to build something that felt like a company we would want to work at. And I just like to have a place that I can work at that feels comfortable and homey and with people that I really enjoy being around. And so I think those things come together, but it's not... It's not the norm. That's not how most companies operate.
Right. Well, when we look at an office space, it's just a space. It's a space where, sure, people have to work, but it doesn't necessarily have to be set up like an office. It can be set up like a spaceship. It could be set up like a house. It needs to reflect our interests and our style. And I think setting it up in a non-traditional way sort of helps people think in a non-traditional way.
That is definitely a recurring theme of everything we've talked about and something at Fuzco. And how do you continue to stretch yourself? Are there other areas or things that you haven't done yet that you've always had your eye on? I wish we could do something like this or a medium that you haven't worked in yet.
Oh, man. Yeah. I would love to design a line of clothes. I would love to, I would love to like... start doing pottery and on my own and start, as a pretend store item, create a line of pottery. I don't know. I feel like our interests are so wide ranging and there's so many interesting things to do in the world but fashion and architecture and objects and travel are all things that I think help guide our work currently.
You're doing some of that with Pretend Store, and maybe this would be a good time to talk about it. It seems like most creative people and agencies that work in this area eventually come to that realization, which is we've got all these skills here.
Right.
And, we love to do client work, but we've also got some of our own ideas. Let's make a thing. So how did Pretend Store come about, and what are the types of things that fit under that umbrella?
So Pretend Store actually started when we had our first office that we fully designed, which was 85 and a half Spring Street. We were moving out of that office into a bigger office, and we were planning on leasing it. And before the new lease started, we basically had this empty shell that we thought, why don't we do something with this space? And so we talked to some friends of ours and invited various people in to sort of create their own version of a store. And, we had a lot of people. We had Workstead come in and create a lighting store. They also had these amazing dinners with local chefs. We had O Plus A out in San Francisco. They're an architecture firm, come in and do these revolving artist installation type stores that were really cool. We had other local retailers like Proud Mary come in and host pop-ups. And so it was this ever-changing space that, different people's interpretation of a store. And that's where the name Pretend Store came. And then we thought, why don't we start making... We had made some of our own things. in the past. And then we thought, why don't we bundle all these things together and actually create an online version of this? So once the space was actually leased and we had to close those pop-ups, we spun it around into an online store, and has since evolved from there.
I bought something from Pretend Store this morning. I got it really spoke to me, this hat. It's a green hat that says spreadsheets.
Yes, you're a spreadsheets person.
Oh man, I'm in spreadsheets all day long. I love spreadsheets.
I know,
actually.
They're and great.
I feel like I want to gift that to about half of the team at Lumi.
Oh, that's so great. So
it's pretty funny. but describe some of the other things that you have created that are on the store.
So I'd say our most successful item is the Pocket Art Director, which is, it's a 20-sided die that has, you know, very sort of cliche art directory type things. Like I think one of the sides says more white space, or, you know, keep it minimal, or, you know, it was a joke at the time. Actually, it was something that we made as a ad for a conference that was happening in Charleston, and people were supposed to cut out the object and then create their own 20-sided die, you know, out of paper. And uh-huh. People loved it. And we thought, why don't we make this a real thing? And so we connected with a die maker, and actually finding a die maker was a really hard process, and it's still a hard process. But yeah, bringing it to life was really cool, and people have responded really well to it. We've also worked.
I need one of those.
Yeah, they're really cool.
I feel like I could just step away from the whole process if I just gave
right, I know.
Gave all the people on my team one of these. I would
totally. So we actually just, so we've been selling, we've that's been in the shop for a long time, maybe 3 years or so, but we've always had plans to make other die, and we finally came out with other die. So we'll be launching Pocket Developer, Pocket Founder, and Pocket Emoji in the next little while. And I've Pocket Developer and Pocket Founder are actually especially hilarious. So yeah, that'll be fun. But then we also have, you know, higher end things, like we worked with Todd Heim on these beautiful, enormous linen towels that you see on the site. And that was really fun. And we worked on this skate deck that was pretty rad. And I mean, it's all been really fun. So a lot of the products are collaborations with friends and with clients, but some of them are self-directed. So, you know, the constellation tees are something that we did in house, and the hats are something that we did in house. And so, you know, we're trying to keep it interesting. And it's been a conversation that we've had internally as to, do we care about the, you know, the success of the store, or do we continue making it just a passion project? So it's actually hard to, because the store doesn't make money. It really just breaks even, or maybe loses money. And so part of us is like, what if we actually tried to make money? But would that change the store? You know, would it not be fun anymore? Or would we start making products that we're not proud of? That sort of thing. So it's a conversation.
Yeah. I mean, that was going to be my next question, which is, you know, what's your ambition for this in the long term? Because it is, you know, you can't just expect it, you know, to thrive on its own. Mm-hmm. It's going to at best break even if you do that.
Yeah.
And if you really want it to become its own successful, you know, free standing business, mm-hmm. you really have to put some effort behind it.
Totally.
What is that discussion like? I mean, because presumably right now it's, you know, some smaller percentage of your time.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to like build it out as a real thing, what would that look like? Or have you had ideas for what that would develop into?
Yeah. I mean, so it currently is sort of like a downtime thing where if our designers don't have anything to do, they have a list of ideas they've been thinking about for Pretend Store that they'll work on, or, you know, like finding development hours to put toward. Like right now we want to add related products onto the site. You know, part of it is how much can we afford to update and I guess grow the site. Part of the purpose of Pretend Store too is to kind of experience what our clients are experiencing. And working with Shopify and working with MailChimp and having these integrations and ShipStation, you know, all the little pieces that go into making Pretend Store function is a small window into the world of what our clients are experiencing. And so there are things like creating Facebook ads and, you know, the idea of growth marketing that we are interested in that will actually help propel Pretend Store. But will also be a potentially significant cost to the business. The worth will be split between what it actually does for Pretend Store, but also the learning and experience that goes into it and that we get on the other side. So
when you think about all the projects that are coming in, so you have, you know, some bigger clients and people that you've been working with for a long time and probably some new people coming in the door. You have these like more startup-y or smaller projects or things that you're doing for the local community. You've got your own projects, your own internal things that you're doing with Pretend Store. How do you decide how much time to dedicate to all those different things? And is it just like you kind of like to have your finger in all of these different pies because it's fun, or is that something that you think will change because I don't know.
Yeah.
it's hard to go. You kind of have to maybe pick a direction or find different people to run those different businesses, because
right.
If you want to get more big client work, you're going to need to
right.
push that aspect of the business too.
Right. I mean, I will say that the vast majority of our resources are directed at Fuzco. You know, Pretend Store and Sirius Buildings. Sirius Buildings is really just me and part of Josh. And then Pretend Store is, you know, has a little skeleton crew of people that work on it, aside from, you know, designer time when they have downtime. But you're totally right. I mean, if we wanted to grow either of those special projects, then we'd need to carve out a team and carve out time to dedicate to them. Because I think, you know, as far as the way that we're able to work on them now, they sort of have reached the scale that they're going to get to until that actually happens. I guess what's hard for Josh and I in particular is boundaries. we're so excited about everything. We want to try everything. And so saying no has been something that we've learned how to do over the years, and we need to do better. And especially with Fuzco Services, I think we've done a lot in the past few years to sort of carve out more of a niche and carve out more of a distinct process and become more specialists in a specific set of things rather than taking on, you know, everything. I think it helps the business stay efficient and predictable in a lot of ways. I think the thing that we still struggle with is all of our work comes through word of mouth, which is awesome, but there is a little bit that we have to fight against ourselves to, you know, not just take on the next job that emails us. It's like, you know, we want to start reaching out to potential clients and really defining our portfolio based on the type of work that we want to be getting more of. And so that's something that we're actually actively working on this year.
What are the things that you are saying no to these days?
I think, you know, it's instinctual feelings about clients that we don't necessarily know that we're going to work that well with, or maybe just getting a sense for just taking on projects that we know are going to be home runs. And it's still a wide variety of work and a wide variety of industries, but I think it's become more about, you know, choosing the work by the people that we're going to be working with. But, you know, we would love to do a lot more work in the hotel industry. We'd love to do a lot more work for e-commerce, our companies with an e-commerce component, fashion, a little bit more streamlined than what we do now.
As we wrap up, I'm curious to hear just when I think about Fuzco and you know, the creative output, to me, it's a big inspiration. But what are the things that inspire you? What are the people or you know, things that you look at that are references in your world?
So, I mean, I look at architecture all the time. I'm obsessed with Italy right now, and I just watched Call Me by Your Name by Luca Guadagnino. I'm not going to say his name right, but Guadagnino, and his other films, Big Love and A Bigger Splash. I feel like, you know, the subtle sensibilities that he brings to his work are really beautiful. And, you know, I love the timelessness of Italian architecture, and there's so much to be inspired by.
Thank you so much for sharing all of this. If people want to find out more about Fuzco and all of your projects, they should go to fuzco.com. We'll put some links. Is there anything you want to point people to or things you want to have people check out?
Yeah, I mean, fuzco.com is great. Pretendstore.co is where our little shop is. And then we have seriousbuildings.com. And we're working on actually the one building that we're currently working on that will be our new office in Charleston is the 28 Pitt Street building. And I'm going to update the images. We're doing a series of like photographs during the process so we can really look back at all the different phases. And so I'll be updating that if people want to check it out. We're right now working out of our house in Charleston, which everyone is being really great troopers about. But once Pitt Street's finished, we'll be moving in there. And it's a really cool building from, I think people have dated parts of the building back to 1790. Yeah, we're very excited about it.
For designers who want to work with you but don't live in Charleston, what's your pitch to them to why they should move?
Why they should move to Charleston?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So I actually really think that Charleston is the best place in America that you can live for a number of reasons. Number one, the weather here is really incredible. You actually do have seasons. So it's not just, you know, warm most of the time and beautiful blue skies most of the time. But then the wintertime, you know, we will get snow occasionally and it gets cold and we have fall and we have spring. And so, you know, it's not Florida where it's warm all the time and you don't really notice as the time changes. So that's really great. The weather is amazing. The architecture here is, you know, colonial, beautiful American colonial architecture. If you're able to live downtown, living downtown is the best because you really don't need a car. You can walk everywhere. I just think the lifestyle of not being in a car very often at all is amazing. And getting out and walking and going to the grocery store and all that is great. And the food scene here is, you know, I feel spoiled. When I go to other cities, I've had amazing meals with other cities, but you know, I feel like the food here is just incredible, except we don't have great Japanese food here yet. Maybe just there's a food truck here. That's great. But we need Japanese food. We need Indian food.
The rent's gotta be cheaper than New York, San Francisco.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely more affordable. I will say that it has become a more expensive city because the tourism industry here is a big deal. I'd say Charleston and Portland are on par as far as living expenses. Charleston is 6 people right now, including Josh and I. And we have one remote designer, Colin, in Boise, Idaho. He's great. He's been with us 5+ years. He actually got a signet ring on his 5th anniversary. It was pretty fun. That's our 5-year anniversary gift. which we made up because he was 5 years old. And Portland is growing faster than Charleston. So we're, let's see, how big are we out there? I think we are 9 people, but we're going to be hiring more there before we are hiring more in Charleston. So that's something to know.
So go check out fuzco.com/work.
Yes.
Cool.
Perfect.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was fun.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you got something useful out of it, I would love to hear what that was. Consider writing a short review, could be just a sentence long, by going to iTunes and searching for Well Made. I want to hear it all. I want to hear good, bad. I want to hear your constructive criticisms. I am just trying to make this show as useful as possible for you. So tell us what you think. That is the very best way that you can support the show. Thanks, and see you next time.